Hold a seat at the bar to join us for another episode of McAnally's Pubcast, a podcast exploring the fun and fantastical mind of Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files series. Hosts Tanzin Jess and Maggie bring you another round of literary analysis on this immense, immersive, and colorful environment inhabited by Harry Dresden, the world's only licensed private investigator and professional wizard. Join an active and engaged community of new and diehard dedicated fans focused on the fabulous themes, theories, characters, context, lore, and more. This is McAnally's Dresden Files Pubcast by Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.
Welcome to the McAnally's Pubcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 17.22, Far-Fetched, where we are covering the novel Proven Guilty. My name is Tanzin, and I'm joined by Maggie.
Hello, hello.
And Jess.
109 days.
And our guest, Shay.
Hello again.
Thank you so much to our Patreon subscribers for your generous support. It's people like you who help us keep doing what we're doing. If you're not yet a Patreon subscriber, sign up today and get a fuck ton of bonus content, kick-ass merch, behind-the-scenes outtakes, and more. Sign up today at patreon.com/freeflowrambling.
Chapter 35. Harry and his compatriots infiltrate the theater and clear out the lesser fetches.
Okay, nobody wants to say anything? Fine. When he bursts through the door and yells, "I'm all out of bubblegum," that's a line from They Live.
They Live!
Yeah. Jess should know this, because what's Stu's favorite thing? Three favorite things.
He says it all the goddamn time.
He improvised that line, right?
I'm pretty sure he does. Fun fact, Roddy Piper's name in the movie is actually called Nada because he is no one.
Yeah.
Like, they're so, for a cheesy as fuck 80s John Carpenter movie with a ridiculously, like, 20-minute long fucking fight scene.
Longest fight scene ever.
I fucking love that scene every time. There's so many deeper meanings to it. Like, him just being essentially a nobody and stumbling on, like, this big secret that it's just aliens controlling everybody. And to be called
Doesn't it just feel a little bit too true to life right now?
I'm pretty sure it felt pretty fucking true to life in the 80s. But no, this is definitely
closer to proof now, though.
yeah, a little bit more. But easily one of my favorite movies. I even got a little They Live alien
on
here.
Yeah, you do.
It's one of my favorites.
That is funny. Yeah, this is definitely one of those ones. Reading this book, I'm like, okay, you can tell that he's quoting something because it's too obscure of a thing to... Yeah, definitely one I had to look up because, again, never heard of this movie or the thing.
It's a pretty classic, this one.
It is, as it turns out, but yeah.
Many a boss has quoted over the years.
I think the funniest part about him quoting this and, like, making this dramatic entrance to, like, catch attention is that there's no response.
It's I know. No one's there. Fetches are like, fuck you, I'm not coming at it.
I laughed my ass off reading that part because he's, like, going around, like, trying to call out for them, like, really? No one is here. No one's going to jump out at me. Really?
And it's so funny because in most cases, right, I mean, I swear it's like playing games with, like, kids and stuff like that, right? It's like they just can't help but respond to the, like, are you hiding behind the door? No, I'm not behind the door. You know, it's like he's kind of looking for one of those movies and they just moments. He's looking for one of those moments and they just don't oblige.
I think the description of the theater totally reminds me of, like, I'm going to say Ghostbusters, but you know that, like, ghost story where, like, the room drops in temperature and you could suddenly see the breath when the ghosts or the supernatural entity is nearby. But that's how, like, I see this when he like, that's... how he's saying how it's already the unnaturally chilled room, basically.
Like it. Yeah. Oh, I do like that he has this whole shtick about, I've got to act like I'm some crazy lone ranger who's here to take on the day so they don't suspect I've got an entourage. I really like that. Both belief he had and the performance he puts behind it. Right, because he's like, yeah, if I was by myself, this would be the perfect opportunity to ambush them, but not if I've got, so yeah, how do I play this right?
I did. I enjoyed it.
I loved the call out to, like, the old farmer going to where there is clearly danger, because that's how a lot of these movies start out.
Don't go up the stairs! Don't go!
Don't go up the stairs. Don't go to the creepy cave. But I also love the whole farmer thing, because it's that farmer. He's got his shotgun and his fucking lantern, and he's just like, oh, who's there? And then the shotgun's never fired. He's fucking dead. And that's how it all starts.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, we're very much still in homage land, I think.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
I am also okay.
But I think it does fit with this, like you say, homage, but because it makes sense, because the theater has itself been kind of locked up and closed off for the last few days or whatever because of, right? So it's like, it is kind of nice that it's, again, we've had so many references to this blazing July weather that he couldn't wear his duster around. And then, yeah, exactly. You're walking into this, what is probably by basic definition, a drafty, old, chilly theater kind of a place. But then again, that it's just that much more so because it's essentially been taken over by, you know, ghosts and monsters kind of a thing, right?
Already so has its creep factor.
Psychological, magical, whatever. It's all sort of plays into that whole thing. Mm. Yeah.
And independent theaters are just so a vibe anyways, you know? They kind of always have that homage going towards the more olden day, timey, grandeur theater aspect versus
the big red curtain.
Right.
Exactly.
Love the ones that have like the mezzanine too.
Right.
So cool. And Calgary, we have one. It's the Globe. And they totally have like that really old school vibe, like the curtains, everything.
So Harry, you know, keeps doing his try to catch the attention of the Fetch. And then finally, like, has this instinctive moment and he flings himself through this curtain doorway, and here's the Fetch lurking nearby, and it's in this sort of cat form. It had taken the form of a creature that could loosely be called a cat. It was twice the size of Mr. It was twice Mr.'s size, and its moldy black fur stood out in tufts and spikes.
Oh, I love how you just looked to me right away.
Pet cemetery, right? Or you have a different
one? No. So my initial thought was Wolfman, of course. Because I'm thinking, like, when it's bigger, it's obviously human.
Man-sized?
Yeah, like man-sized. But the other one that really stuck out more so, especially rereading to do my notes, was a great Malcolm McDowell classic from the 80s, Cat People.
Oh, okay.
So
I wasn't sure about this one. Like, that's the only one I could think of was Pet Cemetery, but it wasn't quite right, especially in the terms of what they say later about
in terms of size. So Cat People, if you're, like, really into niche horror, you see, like, random little spoofs. I know, like, I'm pretty sure, and I'm going to sound South Park here, but Simpsons did it. Guaranteed they did at one point. Man and woman get married. This one's from Serbia. But a year into their marriage, she starts acting super different. And eventually she can transform into this cat person. And I don't remember a lot of this movie. I've seen it multiple times, but I can never fucking remember it to save my life. I just remember Malcolm McDowell and a lady's turning into a cat doing weird cat shit in the middle of the night. But
checks out. Seems legit.
Kind of like referring to it like the mangy kind of look. It could just be very much Butcher's twist on it. And I can understand, like, the Pet Cemetery reference because, like, the cover
it sounded
is, like,
a little decayed, right?
Yeah, a little decayed.
A brought-to-life cat is what it kind of reminded me
of. If we are horribly wrong, I'd love to be called out, and it might give me new horror movies to watch. So, but I did initially think Cat People because giant cat.
Fair enough. I haven't seen that one, so I wouldn't have made the connection. So,
the annoying thing about these fetches being so emotionally manifested is that your physical barriers don't do shit for defense, which is not fair.
Yes, well, and that's the problem he's been having all along, as he keeps alluding to their magic immune kind of a thing. All his
its ability to ooze through his shield.
Yeah, that's rude. Crazy. Ew.
Yeah. Well, I assumed it was the shield going more oozy than the creature.
It has to be both. Why not both?
No ooze without ooze.
Either way, something sticky's going on.
Because he says the shield is like thick sludge, so I didn't imagine the creature oozing as much as him just, like, mushing through it like it was jello-y or something. But either way, there's,
Whole lot of oozing going on.
Doesn't help him any, yeah, whichever way it is.
That's how I want to treat the Cheshire Cat, though. As soon as the Cheshire Cat starts to manifest in front of me, wallop it right in the nose. Absolutely not. Get the fuck out of here.
I laughed when I saw how he handled it. He was like, ugh.
Done. It goes flying.
That's the exact correct response.
Actually, yeah. Like, one thing I can appreciate about Harry, like, through all of this, because we're getting, like, all the campy as fuck horror tropes, Dresden's just like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Like, he is that character with common sense. Like, oh, there's a killer, then its spirit is attached to this state, and it's coming back to kill people? Well, excuse me, I'm just going to move anywhere but here.
Right.
Oh, you want to run up the stairs to get away? How about the front door that's, like, a foot away from us?
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because, like, the 5 minutes before that, when he's trying to lure them out, he even makes that comment. He's like, I'm going to be forced to do, like, cliche movie things. Like, I'll walk backwards into the room, you know, and all this. Right? So it's like he does have that level of awareness already where he's he's like, you know what? No, I just was mocking that everybody does this, like, gotta keep his cool and just be like, it's like Indiana Jones in the whip scene.
Harry tells a little more with the Feli fetch.
Tans is determined to be the one that creates the sort of like Latinized.
The chlorophened of
four.
This, yeah.
All my notes the next few chapters are making up different variations.
Well, that's what I say. We've complained that the White Council hasn't come up with a lexicon or something like that. Tans is like, I'm on this, okay?
All right.
You're all getting names.
The White Council hasn't done this? This is a job for Tans. Yeah. Oh my God.
So Harry takes advantage of both his bespelled duster and the chainmail underneath, and Murphy and Thomas zip in for an assist.
Yes.
Murphy and Thomas to the rescue.
Yeah, followed up by some damaging danger butterflies, courtesy of Lily.
So funny thinking of, you know...
Danger flies.
Yeah. They're always so, like, calm and peaceful, right? And they're like, no, I'm just gonna, like, zap you with these, like...
Oh, you think I'm sweet and kind? Danger flies!
Charity approves once again after this whole fight, after Harry's cut himself, that she is the most responsible one and has actual preparation. Which you would think at least Murphy would have. At
least Murphy
small
might have
kit.
Had the idea, yeah. But Murphy's not a mom, okay? Charity is.
Like, Thomas I can get because he doesn't really need it, but...
Yes, it is. But then again, yeah, Murphy didn't really come with. Had Murphy been the one prepping for this... I could see...
Yeah, they went to Charity's house to get everything Charity needed. They didn't let Murphy know what they
needed. Yeah,
yeah. Meet me at Justin's house, or you're going to die.
Yeah, exactly, right? Where we just showed up, and then I was like, we're going to go do some stuff, so...
I'm surprised she doesn't have a go bag in her car just for magical shit.
At this point, you would think she would be starting to have, right?
See, I consider that, and then I remember that these books are technically one weekend of the year. The rest of the time is not quite so crazy, but...
Yeah, but again, considering, yeah.
If random people are walking around with compact medical kits in their purses, like, come on.
I was going to say, like especially working for SI and stuff like that, right?
What?
No?
I always keep a first aid kit in all my vehicles.
I don't have a first aid kit, but I've always had Band-Aids in all my vehicles and purses and wallets and things.
Right.
They come and go. I've had them in my car various times, and then whatever happens.
Silly Murphy, come on now.
Right, but I was going to say, just again, the more that she takes over this stuff and doesn't need Harry on a day-to-day basis, again, right, you think kind of like the Winchesters or something, you'd think she would have...
A trunk full of salt and guns?
Exactly, you know, where just... Because again, you're banishing trolls and vampires and all the minor stuff she does that exactly you think that you say, like, her trunk or something would have sort of a supernatural go bag in it for these moments, but...
Now, at a certain point, when do we start holding the directors accountable?
Directors.
Because as the conversation between Murph and Thomas here is, the movie doesn't have to be scary. Just a tiny little jump in your seat multiplied over the millions of people who go and watch that film is enough to generate enough for a fetch. Well then, fuck you, Quentin Tarantino, and multiple other directors of movies I will never watch.
Aha, I see. It's all their fault.
Well, I'm just saying, if it's not even... You're not even going to put the effort into making a real scary film, but just to get these tiny little jump-in-your-seat moment. Fuck you! You're powering these fetches for no reason. It's not even worth it.
It's kind of like the guy who did, like, the last Conjuring movie. Not the one that just came out. That one actually scared the shit out of me a few times. But, like, the third one, it was like, What the fuck?
You're wasting everyone's time here.
You're wasting my time. You're wasting my patience.
Fuck.
Have you ever seen Hill House, The Haunting of Hill House, the TV series?
I can't make it past the first episode.
Oh, no, because it has literally one of the best jump scares I have ever come across. Even when I know it's coming, still scares the shit out of me. They're having an argument in the front seat of the car. Mm-hmm. And the actual argument is intense and you're engaged in it. And then something
stuff happens.
Something pops in between them from the back seat.
I
know it's coming too. And I actually legitimately scream. I feel silly after, but
don't get me wrong. Like when I see, it's not the Haunting of Hill House, but like the first two Conjurings, the first Annabelle, majority of the Insidious movies, except the third one, I'm starting to see a trend with the third movies and a lot of franchises for me right now. But those I can rewatch over and over again. I've seen the first two Insidious movies so many different times. They get me every fucking time. And I know the scenes that are about to pop up. And every fucking time, it will scare the shit out of me.
So I get why that would sort of provide energy to like something that's...
That's what I mean, though, is I would start holding these directors accountable.
No more. You can no longer make horror movies. It just feeds a whole supernatural.
And okay.
I'm just saying, the horror movies, if it's going to be real scary, fine. Have your genre, have your fun. It's these ones that are getting the credit even for their almost barely imperceptible fear anyways. But the tiny little jump that's still enough to fuel.
Jessica, breathe for a second. Let me point something out. Let's say that SplatterCon !! times 3 is much like our HorrorCon, where people are going for these campy cult classics that you're getting like the tiniest little jump. Nightmare on Elm Street, you watch the first one, it is campy as shit. It's not scary whatsoever. But when it came out in the 80s, it scared the shit out of people. Same with the first Friday the 13th. It doesn't matter that you're generating these small little jumps. At one point, these things were fucking terrifying. Calm the fuck down, woman.
Yeah, you go back to, you know, the Blob in the 50s or whatever.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, that was terrifying for the times. But my point was, yeah, it is so much.
Yeah, you want to know what's terrifying about the Blob from the 50s now is those fucking effects.
Right. But at the time, how did they do that? But yeah, it's all in the eye of the beholder, right? On what makes you jump isn't going to make someone else jump, isn't going to make, right? Sometimes it's just that moment of how it catches you or whatever, right? So same thing generally. I don't like horror movies. I don't watch horror movies. I don't. But the few times I've had to watch, you know, like slasher films for the most part, I can actually sit there and go, this is actually pretty cheesy. Like it's not, right? But some people do. They get enough of a thrill out of even those that it does something.
How about this also as well? Sure, the movie itself is creating like these teeny little jumps. How many jackass teenagers are in that theater with their friends trying to scare each other and make each other jump? So you're generating another
amplifying
form of fear. You're
it.
Amplifying
Does that
it.
Go to the fetch then? If it only
it
affects like 4 people?
It can definitely go to the fetch.
Well, I mean, if it...
Fear
if
is it, fear is fear.
Like, right?
There was this scare and that person
yeah,
was scared by them.
Four kids are just four kids.
Okay, but not even just four kids. Imagine you have so many different groups through that theater laughing, having a good time and... Fuck
I'm
you.
I'm trying to get these films stopped, okay?
They'll never stop. The drive-in never dies.
Here's something that doesn't make sense, or at least was not a pattern that I picked up on, is this whole fetches always come in threes. And that Lily says is like, duh, obviously, have you been paying attention? And I'm like, I thought I was. I've read this book multiple times, and I still to this day don't ever come across this fact as being like, oh yeah, we've seen him threes every time.
Okay, yeah, I had to, I wrote this down here too, because Fix does come in, and then he says, there's a third fetch, because they took care of the baboon one, and to go look for it. But Harry asks... Why there's a third fetch? And all she says, because they're fetches. It's like, but didn't we already establish when we were outside the building that they did? He tried to figure out if there, and he figured out that there was something inside. But Lily comes over and gives him an exact number of how many are inside, doesn't she? So like, why is he asking again? Why is there a third one? Because she told you outside already, buddy. We already found out.
That I was gonna say, I feel like a small. I'm kind of with you there.
It's
I
kind
feel
of
like
a weird moment.
Have.
Like, why is he asking why when he knows there are more in there?
Yeah. As far as the why they do, I think I took it more as meaning like these little guys, maybe they need, you know, they right
because they're kind of fey and they like threes.
Well, that, but again, like the smaller ones are going to have backup, right? Because, yeah, I don't think we got evidence that anybody else came through with Hammerhand.
I would argue the Reaper and the Scarecrow came through with Hammerhands.
But, well, so that's my question. Did they all come through at the same time? Because they were sort of dealt with one at a time. That was what?
That's what I thought, is that there were four the very first time he was at the hotel trying to summon them. He, like...
I think that, well, that wasn't the first time summoning them, but yeah, four came through because three got redirected, and the fourth one, the
right? So, like, doesn't that
through.
Already well, and tell I Lily to fuck off?
But that's why I'm saying, I wonder if it's supposed to be like in the smaller guys, they band together and go, these were all bigger, more effective, more efficient, scarier, or something. So, yeah, either that or again, Butcher just had a complete and total brain lapse or something, and threw this detail in that he forgot to back up anywhere else.
Well, and it doesn't say, like, it doesn't necessarily imply exactly that there, yeah, because the, like, the, it, what it says exactly here, the third, Lily said, there will be a third fetch. Why, I asked, because they're fetches, Fix answered. We should check the bathrooms. Which is, could be implied that they could come in threes, or... Fix is just giving him a fuck off answer. Like, why are you asking if there's more? We already told you outside.
Yeah,
why,
but
fuck
yeah.
Just cause.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yes, Lily says, indeed, three lesser fetches at least. They cannot sense us yet, but they will know when anyone enters and attack.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so lesser, yeah.
So him asking already. Why? Because I told you so already.
Bitch, do you even fucking listen to me?
Which again.
We had this moment. You knew were there things inside.
Right?
Did you forget? Did you have a lapse in judgment between outside and inside?
I got so frazzled.
Is there time travel involved and you're a different person now?
Probably.
Did all your shitty one-liners and having to use every trope in the book to
lure them out? That's probably exactly it. Lily, do you know how hard it is to memorize my lines? Every morning, you know those calendars where you learn a word a day?
Yeah.
Every morning, Harry picks up and he rips off like three pop culture references and he's like, all right, I gotta fit these three in today.
I would like to think he goes some because he knows he's dealing with movie monsters, so hence why he's gonna bone up his arsenal of movie, like horror movie references, right?
But he always does his homework. He may not sleep, but he always does his homework.
Yeah, yeah, and but he's like, all right.
Technically, he is still concussed.
No, we're done using that. You can only use a concussion excuse
it's
so many fucking times. I don't say one for 8 books.
Did you know that 41 adults a day in Alberta get concussed? Okay.
Well, that's not Alberta. It's Chicago.
I was going to say, like, did you know it happens in Alberta? Little known fact, there's not 41 people getting concussed in Chicago. It's one man getting 41 concussions a day.
A very tall, lanky one.
That has been the commercial of the week that I've seen 4,500 times, is that 41 people get a concussion, and concussions are actually really important, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, I haven't watched a commercial in a decade.
Yeah.
What's a commercial these days?
So Nature Red, not a real movie? Because that's where they say the panther and the baboon are from.
No.
I feel like, is it not a close reference?
Island of Dr. Moreau. That could be one, too.
Oh, yeah, actually.
Oh, that's, I was going to say, I feel like there is some, like...
Red Horizon.
Like, yeah.
Red Dead Redemption.
Like...
That's a video game, Jessica.
Nature Morons. Yeah, we'll make it a movie one day. Maybe by the time this episode comes out.
There are a couple of movies that are... But, I mean, I didn't mention any of them with the mutated, like, animals.
No.
Either they were just too current, or they...
There's another
one that I just didn't recognize.
There's another one too. It's a really old black and white one, and I can see it in my mind, but I can't name it off the top of my head. But yeah, The Island of Dr. Moreau with Marlon Brando just came out.
Right.
To my mind. That's probably why I thought, like, the Panther Woman and Simpsons did it, because they did a spoof for their Halloween episode, but Dr. Hibbert was Dr. Moreau, and he was changing people into animals.
Right.
And there's I vaguely remember that one.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
That's probably what made me think of it. And then, yeah, as we said, the baboon and the panther, and they're, like, patchy and mutated. It's like, oh, my God.
See, it's hard to say at this point, because, again, obviously, I don't know a lot. It's more by... reference or popularity, if I'm aware of, right? So I'm like, maybe it's just the fact that I've read this book 6 times, that it's starting to, like, integrate as a pseudo-real memory or something like that. You know,
like Larry Fowler?
You know, like the one with the...
I swear to God, there's a talk show out there that's so similar.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Well, gotta love while being on the podcast. Like, sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, I know this. And then, like, something else hits me mid talking, it's like, oh my fucking God, why didn't I figure that out before?
Right? The beauty of multiple perspectives coming together.
Well, I just like to say, thanks for a reference I can finally fucking get, Bucky the Murder Doll. Finally, really? An easy one.
Really? I don't know. It's pretty vague, that.
Okay, my two cents, I might be wrong. Bucky the Murder Doll might be Annabelle.
Gotta be Annabelle. It's for sure Annabelle.
No,
definitely.
But
she ran around with red hair and overalls, right?
Absolutely. No, it's totally Chucky, but
yeah. Harry knows his homunculus is okay.
I just love how he handles it, though. He takes his Ozark walking club and clubs his head straight off.
So good.
That is like how Chucky should have been handled. You're running, you're throwing it into a fire. No, you're bigger than a 3-foot fucking doll. Just get a long stick and hit it.
No, that's how they deal with Chucky and Robot Chicken. Like, beat his fucking head off. What the hell are we doing here?
I feel like 3 feet is even really tall for Chucky, because, like, 3 feet is the shallow end of a pool.
But every single adult on this planet who's had a toddler.
This is about 3 feet.
Yeah, I feel like Chucky's, like, knee-high.
No, he would be up here.
Was he that big?
My legs are 3.5 feet long.
Well, I understand the concept of 3 feet. I just didn't think Chucky
was that big a doll.
Yeah.
That's
like my walking Kathy doll.
I thought he was, like, a Cabbage Patch sized.
Yeah, more so.
There is a song by the band Ice Nine Kills. They make songs based off of horror movies. And in one of them, they do Chucky, and it's, because a 3-foot tall demonic doll will make you his bitch. That's how I know Chucky is 3 feet tall.
Okay. If it is, again, I just see him as most kids' doll. Maybe you're like 2 feet kind of a thing for a big plastic doll like that. But okay.
So they take out Chucky, or whoever the fuck is calling
about. Hey, hey, we don't want to get sued here.
Copyright.
No one's listening to that.
That
would have been last episode. We would have gotten caught for that.
We can only be hit for that sound bite so many times before they just let us use it. So they find where they want to cross over. Only problem is that Lily can sense that this crossover is not exactly where they expected it to be. Sure, it's in winter.
Not just
it's actually very in winter.
It's almost as most in winter as you can possibly be.
I liked how they described the theater with like how it like was so cold and lit like an aurora borealis, like that is.
Yeah. And I can picture that. I love that sort
of the lights reflecting off.
Yeah.
It's cool.
That's scary. It's the center of her domain.
Oh.
Mabs, that is.
Swell. And I love, once again, even Charity is like, wait, the only Mab I know is, he's like, yeah, that Mab. And she's like, oh, shit. Charity's like, once again, let me stop and pray.
Now, again,
every 5 minutes, this just ramps up. I'm going to just keep sending another prayer out there.
We've already gone over the fact that the Fetches are her guys, right? Whether or not they have their own side jobs and hobbies.
Yeah. Fear, horror. Yeah, let's send it with the air.
We already knew we were a little bit adjacent to Mab and her shit.
But yes, not exactly adjacent, not like right. Hey, Mab, how's it going? Allow me to, you know, knock on your door.
Right, so the original plan to have Lily and Fix accompany them, not gonna work, because how the fuck is Lily gonna hold a veil in winter?
Yeah.
Sorry, Harry, that's about all my power now.
And, well, this is the thing, and it's the actual power, and it's the politics of it, too, right? She's like, I'm, summer royalty, this is winter royalty. If I start laying the smack down, that's going to be a declaration of war, essentially, you know? She's like, yeah, sure. Things scurrying around the border, I can smack them away. This is ours. But yeah, she's like, I can't jump into the middle of theirs and start being like, yo, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Which, fair enough, because they sure as fuck don't want winter walking in the middle of summer. So yeah, so it's like, I can help you, but.
Well, and it also sounds like the contrasting energy probably attracts the.
All kind, right?
Because it reacts violently, so I would imagine it's a different, like, if it was winter holding it open, but summer's opening open, so that's gonna draw the attention of the opposite.
Even Harry says that were he to create fire magic in winter, it'd be much weaker than his normal fire magic, so you kind of almost expect the same thing from summer, too.
Yeah,
it's like, this just isn't the place.
Right, exactly. They cancel each other out kind of a thing, right?
And on top of that, it creates this moment, or moment, because technically speaking, the fairies can open a veil wherever the fuck they want. So this whole defending the borders is a kind of symbolic gesture in a way of, okay, we will not jump straight into Arctis Tor as long as you don't jump straight into ours, and we will all stand on this defense line and have our fucking war here.
Yeah.
Because now that I think about it, oh yeah, Mab and Titania could literally just be showing up on each other's doorsteps every day and being like, you motherfucking bitch!
Right?
So it is, you know, the propriety and the lawful ways in which they are upholding this,
again, the supernatural rules of hospitality and whatever, right? Exactly. When you're dealing with beings that can throw around whatever they want, how do you keep each other in check?
So annoying how much more diplomacy is needed the more powerful you get.
Right? Fucking fuckers.
People so, like yeah. Harry who can just go blasting doors off of anything because, Marcone, you can fix it. Who gives a shit?
I'm an independent. I'm not speaking on anyone's behalf. I'll blow you all up just the same. Yeah, exactly, right?
So in some ways, it's probably good that that fix has to stay behind because then there's not a conflict.
Yes, but again, they're that much without assistance, guidance, and that element of power that they thought, oh, yeah, sure, we'll get a summer night to come kick some winter butt, you know? And it's like, oh, nope, no, we won't. Once again.
It's a shame that the amount of power needed by Lily is so intense that Lily cannot even defend herself and needs Fix to therefore remain and close the way or defend the way.
Defend the way because, yeah, she's got to keep it open for them. She's like, yeah, I can't do all of it.
Annoying.
And yet, are we surprised? No. Because Harry can never go in with the deck stacked in his favor.
It was almost a perfect plan.
Harry's a wizard. He has lots of stuff. What do we do at every opportunity to negate all this wonderful stuff that he can do and all these powerful friends he has?
It's kind of smart of Jim Butcher, really. It's a good way of having this insanely well-connected character still.
Well, that's the entire point, right? Again, No book if there's no, oh, we just walked in and zapped everybody. We just flew into Mordor, book over. You know? It's
like conflict is interesting.
Right, yeah.
Authors are so dumb. I could have written their books in 10 pages or less.
I know, right?
Oh,
jeez.
So Harry does try to give them the opportunity to back out if they want because, like,
I can't ask you to go less, in.
Yeah, but of course, nobody takes it.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, that is actually incredibly good leadership, okay? To be able to say, okay, stakes were already bad, but they're worse now. If this is another chance now to back out, that's fair. Obviously, these people are not going to do that, but I do think it's fair for him to be like, okay, listen.
Okay, I thought we were signing up for this. It ended up being this. And now we turn to this. Are y'all sure you want to keep going with this? But yes.
It's a darling moment. I like
but
it.
But before
they all step up.
And they were my heroes.
Right.
Before he can finish
telling everybody to stay home, they're already lining up on his side of it.
And that includes Charity.
And that includes Charity, which again, not surprising.
What do you mean that includes? She should be the first one out. Yeah. That's your kid in there.
Like, well, and that's the thing, right? Again, it's one of those like, okay, it's not so much for you, Dresden, as I'm going to get my daughter back. Yeah. And but yes, it's, yeah.
It'd be really funny if actually Harry and Thomas and Murphy were like, whew, sticks have changed. Like, I don't know if we're in this anymore. And Charity's like, that's okay. I will force you in there with my gun.
Yeah,
right. See this warhammer? It's going to go up your ass.
Harry, it's so nice of you to give us this option. But if we don't all walk through that door.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Round two.
Mm-hmm. This is the last episode that we have Shay with us, guys. Thank you so much, Shayla.
You.
Yes, thank you. It was a pleasure having you.
So nice to have your insight for all these scary movies.
It is.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a lot of fun, even though there's some days I'm just like sleeping on the couch.
Yeah, working on a Sunday. Woo!
Yeah, I'm good. You guys go ahead. I'm going to just take a nap right here. No, thank you again for bringing me on for this. I've had an absolute blast with you guys.
You can find more of Shayla on her own social media, The Horrorphile.
62318.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
I am on TikTok and Instagram. Again, Horrorphile 62318. If you want to see all of my ramblings and some of my hatreds and my loves for different books and movies, go check me out.
You can also find Shayla on our Patreon-only podcast at the moment, The Necromancers. And Shayla will be joining us again in the new year for The Detective.
Ooh,
so excited.
Can't wait.
So thank you very much, Shayla.
Thank you.
Woo!
This concludes our episode 17.22, Farfetched. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and macanellis.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the magic alive and to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.